my river. Okay, that's the paragraph. The BLM has granted permission for Idaho General Mines
. This is the Quality News Network. In trading today, the Dow Jones had a triple-digit decline and fell below the 12,000 mark. We'll have the closing Wall Street numbers coming up in our business block. The Senate passed a procedural vote today to allow debate on a resolution that would set a target date of April 1, 2008 for the U.S. combat mission in Iraq to end. The Republicans say they will have the votes to defeat it. President Bush has threatened a veto of both the Senate and House bills that call for a troop withdrawal. An Iraqi army spokesman says that the number of civilian deaths in Baghdad has gone down, as well as the number of insurgent attacks. A U.S. military commander also says the security plan in Baghdad is showing, quote, positive signs of progress. However, today, 3 U.S. soldiers died and 9 were injured in the Diyala province. Iraq's President Jalal Talabani returned back to his Kurdish hometown today. He spent the past 17 days in a hospital in Jordan after he collapsed in northern Iraq. North of Baghdad in Tikrit, the bodies of Saddam Hussein's 2 sons and grandson have been exhumed and reburied near his grave. President Bush wrapped up his Latin American trip by holding a press conference in Mexico today with Mexican President Felipe Calderon. Bush pledged to update the U.S. immigration laws and crack down on illegal drug trafficking. President Bush was also asked about the recent firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. He responded that he is standing by Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. However, the president admitted, as Gonzalez did yesterday, that, quote, mistakes were made. Attorney General Gonzalez will meet with congressional lawmakers over the next week to further explain the matter. Yesterday, his chief of staff resigned because he failed to give complete explanations to Congress about the removal of the 8 prosecutors. In a civil trial involving the relatives of victims of the USS Cole bombing in 2000, the federal judge in the case said today that Sudan is responsible for the attack. On Saturday, there will be a vote by the Palestinian Legislative Council on the new Palestinian Unity Government, which will bring Hamas and Fatah together. A UN report predicts that in the year 2050, the world's population will reach 9.2 billion. It is currently 6.7 billion. Most of all of the new growth is expected in the developing world. You are listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
The Texas House of Representatives today voted to overturn the governor's controversial executive order that would require sixth-grade girls to receive an anti-cervical cancer vaccine. There is a similar bill under consideration in the Texas Senate. The FDA is warning that widely prescribed sleeping pills such as Ambien and Lunesta can cause dangerous side effects, including sleep driving and sleep eating. In both instances, the patient has no memory of the activity. The FDA wants stronger warnings on the medication labels. California's Attorney General announced a plea deal has been reached in the HP media spying scandal. The former Hewlett-Packard chairwoman, Patricia Dunn, and 3 others will enter guilty pleas to misdemeanor charges today. General Motors reported it had a fourth quarter profit of $950 million after several quarters of losses. Overall, in 2006, GM lost $2 billion. Scholastic, Inc., the publisher of the seventh and final Harry Potter book, will print 12 million copies in its first printing. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows will be released July 21st. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.16 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 57 points at 12,133, NASDAQ up 21, S&P 500 up 9. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
And it's time to wake up, everybody, wake up! Get up out of bed, move it, 1, 2. Where's those trash cans? Bang, bang, clang, clang. Wake up. It's another morning. It's another beautiful day here on planet Earth where somewhere someone's laughing and somewhere people shout. But there's no joy in Mudville. Oh, never mind. How's everybody today? My name, ladies and gentlemen, is Joe Vecchio, and I am the voice of the working man's thinking man. And this is Thursday. What the hell day is it? I always lose track of days. You ever just do that? You just lose track of days? It's Thursday, March 22nd, 2007, and it's a rainy day here in Chicago, but very warm. And I noticed here in the Head-On Radio chat room, they are doing breakfast. So come on into the Head-On Radio chat room. Just go to headonradionetwork.com. And go to the right, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the chat room link, live chat. And you can join some of the smartest people on the Internet, some of the nicest people on the Internet. And they're giving out breakfast. They're doing, some of the guys are giving those wussy, new liberal type breakfast. Screw that. Give me a 3-egg ham, cheese, and mushroom omelet. And about 16 sausage links. And about a half a pound of hash browns. That's my idea of a breakfast. Can't get any work done the rest of the day, but damn it, you had a good breakfast. They got a little place down here off of Western Avenue between Granville and Rosemont called the Hot Rod Grill that has a really, really awesome breakfast. I can get my 3-egg omelet, 4 sausage links, hash browns for about $8. And I love it. I like a good breakfast, but until I started doing the show at this time slot, I very rarely was awake at this time of day. Unless I had to. There were days when I had to work a day job where I had to get up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's saying, yeah, it's bad for the heart. You know what? But it's good for the taste buds, boy. When you have the heart attack, you regret it. But when you're eating it, you're like, none of this, no melon balls for me, buddy. No melon balls for me. No little fruit in a cup. No, that's not breakfast, buddy. You want to eat a breakfast that's so big that you can't, like I said, you can't work for the rest of the day. Anyway, what's going on? They still have the, what the hell is this? I just get going, and Apple is bugging me for a QuickTime update. I don't even use, I don't have a Mac. I have a PC here, but every now and then you get these things. We want to update your software. I'm in the middle of a show, stupid. I know you're an automated piece of software, but leave me alone during my show. When I want an update, I'll ask you for one. Pain in the ass software. Anyway, what the hell is going on? They had Senator Edwards running for president. is got an announcement today. Apparently his wife has some health issues, and maybe he's going to drop out, which would be kind of sad because I happen to like John Edwards a lot. I don't think he's a major-tier candidate just yet, and he was John Kerry's vice presidential pick, and I thought it was a very good vice presidential pick. The front runners right now, as it appears, that are officially running are Senator Clinton and Senator Obama. And I happen to like both of them, and I'm just kind of seeing how that all plays out. I'm not making an official pick in the Democratic primary just yet. Frankly, I am waiting to see what President Gore does. If Gore comes in and says he's running, then I'm a Gore guy, and I will support him. But until he officially announces, I'm just kind of staying out of it. And of course, whoever wins the Democratic primary has got my vote, unless it's like, you know, Zell Miller or somebody, or Joe Lieberman. God help. If the Democrats nominate someone like that, oh my God. I won't leave the party, but I'll start really canvassing to get rid of every leadership position in the Democratic Party. Just. And, you know, you get sick and tired of the compromises. They had the thing yesterday where they authorized subpoenas to go to Rove and Harriet Myers and all that stuff, but they haven't yet issued the subpoenas. And I'm waiting to see what happens at this point because, you know, the boy King does not like anybody questioning his decisions. I'm the decider. And if I say something, if we're going to have some of my people, they're going to sit there and they're going to talk and they're not going to have any oaths and we're not going to have any transcripts. Nobody's going to know what's said behind closed doors. You know, and it's just another example of how these people hate the democratic process. They hate the idea of rule of law. They hate the idea that the ultimate power in this government is, theoretically speaking, the people of the country. They work for us, not the other way around, but they don't see it that way. And unfortunately, a lot of the other supporters of this group don't see it that way either. It's like a cult. You do it. George W. Bush represents everything that is America, and if you hate George W. Bush, you hate America. Actually, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush hates America. Dick Cheney hates America. The Republican leadership hates America. Their financial backers despise America, though they love those American dollars, which is about all they love about America. But what they want is they want to build a society where a lot of people work very hard for very little money to support them. Because, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, as far as they're concerned, you're not human. I'm not human. All these wonderful people here in the chat room, Agnes and Benedict and ELO and Betsy and the Smart Mom, none of these guys are human. And once you understand that, then you understand everything that they do. Because that's how everything works in their eyes. We work for them. How can they pay us less money so that they don't have to pay us so that they can make a bigger profit? Most business, if you look at most business today, the way they're running America, and they talk about making themselves profitable. The way they make themselves profitable is by cutting jobs. And so obviously they're spending less on salary, so, you know, that value goes up and they can tell the shareholders, see, we're profitable! And in the meantime, less and less people can afford to buy the products and or services they're selling. It's a shareholder society. And unfortunately, the shareholders don't seem to care that their CEOs and their executives are basically robbing them blind, because, you know, all the money that they're not paying to the workers is going, getting sucked right up with the executives. What was it? I don't know the exact figures, guys, but I know the chief executive of General Motors, I think it was, which was the largest employer in the 70s before Temp Services and now Walmart took over. Their CEO made something along the lines of 43 times more than the average salary guy, the guy working in the plant, which was considered actually a lot of money back then. But now the average CEO of the average American company makes on the order of 400 to 500 times what their average worker makes. And that's just ridiculous. If you wonder where the money's going, that's where it's going. And if you want to know where I think you should be going, you should be calling me. 1-877-443-2366. 1-877-4. Head on. We got a Beatles break coming up. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here in...
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show, and once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, sticking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the number to call in, 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4, head on, and you can give me an email, joe@cupjoe.com. In fact, I encourage you to write me an email. I want you to write me an email with a subject matter that simply says, I'm listening, because, ladies and gentlemen, the Head On Radio Network is in its infancy stage right now, and if it's going to go past that, it needs investors, and the only way we can get investors is to make sure that they know that we have listeners. I've got a lot of emails so far. I've got them from all over the world. I've got them from all over the country, and I'm very happy for what I have, but I'm not satisfied. I will never be satisfied. So I want you to get on your computer right now that you're listening to the show on, because you pretty much have to have a computer to listen to this show. You can't kid me. You can't kid a kidder. And just write a simple email. It doesn't cost you a penny. Just go there and write to joe@cupjoe.com and just put in the subject heading, I'm listening. And as I collect these emails, I can send them on to the Head On Network, and they can send them on to investors. Say, look, these are the people who are listening to the show. Do you want to disappoint all these little kitties, all these nice little people here? Do you want them to be disappointed and go into their homes crying every day because they can't listen to the Head On Network? Is that what you want? Then they break down crying, and the security guards come and take them away. But still, it's a winning proposition. Oh, goodness. I am still trying to figure out, actually, right now I'm just trying to figure out what I want to talk about, because as always, there's so many things that are going on in with this administration. Right now, the big scandal, of course, is the attorney firing thing, which other guys are going to cover in more in inside detail, but to me, it's just another example of an administration that just simply believes it's above the law. If you look at our Constitution, and if you look at the preamble, the opening lines make it very, very clear who is in charge. And I want to talk about this a little bit, because I really want to put this in perspective. Because a lot of people, they read the words and they don't really understand. And the fight just to write the Constitution to begin with. But the opening words are, as everybody knows, we the people. And I find the entire debate about the Constitution remarkable, because it was just that, a debate. It wasn't a case like with so many other governments before and many governments since of who's got the biggest military. You know, it wasn't Alexander Hamilton who only showed up occasionally because he had other issues to deal with. But it wasn't like Alexander Hamilton showed up with a big old army, and there was Thomas Jefferson's army over there, and there was John Adams' army over there, and George Washington had a group over there, and who was going to fight it out, and who was going to ally with who to pick one person to run whatever new government they had. It wasn't like that. It was all some of the smartest political minds in the country, and in fact in the world, because they were used to dealing in politics, that all got together in Philadelphia in 1789 was when the whole thing was ratified, and throughout the bulk of the summer, just simply sit there and discussed it. And there was a lot of compromise, and there was a lot of things that they wrote into it, not because they thought it was the best way to run things, but because it was the only way to get things run. What you have to understand, now this was still several years, about 6 or 7 years after we had defeated the British. But our freedom was very tentative, because the British wanted land back, the Spanish wanted some land back, and of course they didn't want the colonies to move onward. They, you know, they had their own interests in the area. And it was very likely that if there had been no union, if they hadn't agreed to organize as a single nation, that the states would have been conquered slowly and surely, one by one. And so when people, you know, when I hear all these conservative people talking about, well, you know, the Constitution is sacrosanct, and the Founding Fathers were geniuses who knew everything, I just look at it, and if you read the history of it, you know that's just a bunch of bull. Because if you look at, you know, the high ideals, talking about, you know, the people running the government, you know, a lot of these founders, they had a very different idea of what the people meant. And I've heard the argument about, you know, people talking about, you know, all only property owners, which meant only the very rich. Well, that's not necessarily true, because property ownership back then was very different. I mean, you could own a couple acres if you were just physically capable of farming them. So you didn't need to have a ton of money, just the skill to work the land. And granted, you know, not everybody can be a farmer, but that's not the point. And of course, the big fight for the southern states was for slavery, because representation in the new Congress was based upon population. And the big argument was, do we count these slaves as part of our population? And the people in the Northeast were like, you know, you can't, they're not voting, they're not citizens, they're slaves. And the Southerners say, well, you know, it's a lot of power to us, so we're not going to give in on this. So, damn it, I forget who it was that came up with the compromise. They came up with the compromise of the famous three-fifths rule. They basically, for every five slaves you have, they count as three people. And that way they have their representation. Of course, after the Constitution was ratified, some of the southern states went on a huge slave-buying spree, some of their people there. So, you know, the South always had a disproportional amount of power, still do. Although, nowadays, their population is a lot more than it used to be, mostly thanks to air conditioning. Because, you know, who the hell would want to go back, you know, if there was no air conditioning, ladies and gentlemen, would anybody live in the South? How many people would still be living down there? I lived down there for 12 years, and it was monstrously, monstrously warm. And you never really have a serious cold winter. I mean, here in Chicago, you really have the worst of both worlds, because you've got, you get really cold winters and you get really hot summers. I mean, I came up here last August and I couldn't believe that there was 100-degree temperature out here. And it was really hot. But that doesn't last quite so long. And the springs are very comfortable and the autumns are very comfortable. And you get a few month period or a few week period between mid to late January and March where things get really, really nasty and really, really cold. We had a very mild winter up until then. At any rate, the point is, and this is what happens with me, it's all very, you know, I get disconnected and rambling. But the point is, they had a debate, and they discussed it. And that's how our Constitution came about. And there were a lot of compromises that they dealt with. The Electoral College was a compromise. And it was a compromise for several reasons. It was because of a big reason, not the biggest necessarily, but a big reason was the fact that the technology of the time, you couldn't have a national vote. And by the way, I just read there's an organization called National Popular Vote that wants to get rid of the Electoral College. And how they want to do it is very interesting, because they know they can't get a constitutional amendment to change it, because that's far too difficult, because it takes... to the Senate and two-thirds of the House, I believe, to approve it first. And then it goes to the states, and two-thirds of the state legislatures have to approve it. In order
to participate in the arts, do better in school and in life.
You know, something that made perfect sense. You know, the Equal Rights Amendment. Let's have the same pay for women as for men doing the same job. Gee, what a concept. Equal work for equal pay. Oh, that got defeated. It's very difficult. But what these guys do, they want to form what they call an interstate compact. And what they're asking is for every state legislature, or as many as equals 270 electoral votes, which is how much you need to elect a president, to pass a law in their state legislature that say they will give their electoral votes to whichever candidate wins the national popular vote. Now, a lot of people don't understand the law, and the Constitution is very clear about how the electoral votes are apportioned. It simply says that the state legislators will decide who gets the electoral votes. It's totally up to the state legislators. If you had a situation where they passed a law in, say, Virginia, where they decided, okay, the state legislator voted today that they would determine who their electors go to by the flip of a coin. They would have a big coin flip thing, and that would be determinant. That would how they determine it. Constitutionally speaking, that's perfectly legal. Now, what most states do these days, as some of you know, if you win the popular vote within that state, then that state, that candidate gets all of those electoral votes. It's a winner-take-all system. And the reason why that evolved is because the larger states, who had much more diverse populations, were seeing their electoral votes diluted in several different candidates. And Thomas Jefferson was the one who first started to employ this in a serious manner. And, you know, Jefferson, as idealistic as he was a very practical politician. And once that idea got cemented, that was it. And it hasn't changed. So what these guys want to do, they want to have an interstate compact, an agreement among all states, which is perfectly constitutional for that. And Arkansas just passed that the other day. Oh, the time is running out. It's almost halfway through the show. And I hope I didn't bore you too much with that. I get started to talk about that, I can get on a rambling mode. But let's take a little break if you want to call in and talk to me about this or any other issue. I'm all open for anything. Give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in the news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive. Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why unreportednews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. And I'm sitting, you know, it's one of those days where I don't have a specific topic to talk about, mostly because with so much going on, it's hard to pick a particular thing. I mean, the other shows, and they're great shows, and they're wonderful shows, all of them, and, you know, I like it when people listen to them because they should be listened to. They discuss all these things in more detail. Me, I just simply talk about how this stuff affects you, and I try to talk about how this stuff affects you. Because you know, politics work. Politics affects you, and politics can work to be a force for good. But the only way it can do that is if you pay attention all the time. I use my analogy. I want you to imagine, again, picture it in your mind. There's George W. Bush there in your living room. There's Dick Cheney. There's the entire administration. There's their financial backers. I want you to imagine that they're sitting in your home right now. They're standing there right now with a gun to your head robbing you. Because that's exactly what they're doing. They're doing this every day. They're doing this every night. They're in your house while you sleep. They're in your friend's house. They're in your neighbor's house. They are robbing you blind. And the only way you can prevent that from happening is if you have all of your fellow brothers and sisters working people with you in your room with guns to their heads, metaphorically speaking, saying you're not going to do it because that is your only protection as a working person. Most of us, you know, most of you all are like me. You don't want anything more out of life than to go and do your job and earn enough money to support yourself and have a good time and enjoy life and pass on a better future for your kids. Most people are like that. Most people are like that in the United States. Most people are like that in Mexico. They're like that in Vietnam. They're like that in Canada. They're like that in China. I would say, I don't have numbers on it, but I would say probably a good 80 to 90% of the entire world's population is like that. If they have any ambitions, they're very small ambitions. Maybe run a small business, a little local restaurant, and enough to retire and maybe leave the business on to their kids. They don't want to be big, in charge of a big multinational conglomerate. But that's who the world is run by right now. The conglomerates have the money and the power, and they use it to control governments to give them advantages and take away advantages from us. And the only protection we have from that, the only protection we have from their money and power is our sheer numbers. And God help us all if we ever get to the point where it technologically allows them to do things without cheap labor at all, because I'm telling you right now, they'll start killing us all off. They would like nothing more than for the population of the earth to drop down to less than a billion, maybe 500 million or so, maybe a lot less than that, so that the rest of them can enjoy more. Now, we had our good friend Kevin called up our show yesterday, and he was talking about population control, and I'm all for that. Smart ways of doing it, birth control, population control. I've discussed the possible communal raising of children as opposed to just having the families do it because, you know, frankly, some people shouldn't be parents, in my opinion. And we ought to make it at least easier for people to adopt and maybe make it a little harder for some people to do that. Some people, well, that's racist because, you know, you're really affecting the poor people and then the black people and all that stuff. Well, you know, I don't see it that way. I see it that we have 6 billion people in this world right now, and it's probably going to be about 9 billion by 2050. We hit the first billion in 1800. So our population has gone up 6 times. The world's population has gone up 6 times in the last 200 years or so. That is a lot of people. And that has an effect on the environment. Now, how many human beings can the planet support? I don't know. I really don't know. I couldn't tell you. But we don't want to get to the point where it's impossible for the planet to support us. Now, I've got no worries concerning Mother Earth itself. I don't think we can do anything that bad so that all life gets wiped out. Certainly the cockroaches and the ants will survive us. Those things will live through anything. And then it'll take for either an extraterrestrial race coming here and checking us out or a new group of intelligent species to figure out where we all went wrong. But my point is, we can do it smartly and we can do it without being racist about it. And it just boggles my mind that humans sometimes won't take the intelligent concept for that sort of thing. But, you know, that's the way we are. But if you want to be protected as a working person, if you want to have the money that you deserve, the money that you earn, then the only real way you can do that is by banding together. That's what unions are all about. Unions can become corrupt too, and as with everything else, you got to keep your eye on stuff. It's hard work being a free citizen. It's hard work being a free citizen. And you always have to be careful of people telling you, well, you can have the 16-room mansion and be the big rich person and be just like me and all that, and it becomes a big cult. That's how the right wing operates. They take the class B Republicans, the types who are the ones who want to be in on the scam. They want something quick. They want something easy. They want something for free without cost. And it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. Win the lottery? First of all, I wouldn't know what to do with the $102 million all at once. Do something that's worth $1 million, like write a good book or just work hard, get a good job. That's a different story. You feel a sense of accomplishment because it's more than just about the money. And that's the, you know, that's a problem I do have with working people, is that all they see it is it's about the money, and they do anything to just to keep their job, because the job is more important than the work they're doing. You see what I'm saying? I think a lot of them understand that the work they're doing is just BS. Just as long as they get paid, they don't care. But to me, I don't like that attitude, because it forces you to accept things and to do things that you shouldn't do. Excuse me a second there. I see people put up with such BS at the workplace, and it just boggles my mind. And you try to say something about it, say, don't rock the boat. Don't rock the boat. You'll lose your job. Well, you know something? Sometimes you should lose your job. Sometimes it takes that shock to the system to get out there and realize. You know, I've been unemployed for the most part for two out of the last 3 years, and I'm telling you, at this point in my life, I don't think I can ever work a regular 9-to-5 type of job anymore. First of all, I'm too different. And I've always been that way. And it hurts me in the terms of, you know, I'm always short on cash, and I'm always, you know. But you know what? I see people who do work the regular jobs and do that, and then they're just miserable. They're not working the job to be happy. They're working the job because they have to. And then, you know, they have this work ethic where they feel proud of that. But you know, they feel proud of just being treated poorly by their bosses. And they're proud of that. And it's a race to the bottom, because, you know, you're working hard for a living and you want a good salary, but, you know, there's some guy in Mexico that'll do the same amount of work for a quarter of your salary. There's a guy in Vietnam and a woman in Vietnam that'll do the same thing for a tenth of your salary. And there's people in China that'll do it for a tenth of your salary or even less, because they have that same attitude too, and they really don't care so long as they get enough to survive on. But you know what? That's a wrong attitude. And the people in China blame us for stuff, and we here in America, we blame the Chinese workers and we blame the Mexican workers. You're blaming the wrong people. The Chinese workers and the Mexican workers and the Vietnamese workers, and we're all over the world. None of these people set policy. None of these people set policy. They're simply doing what they need to do to survive, to feed their families, and to hopefully leave a better future for their kids. The same exact things you want. And when the people point at the Mexicans and say, there's your problem, they're lying to you. It's the ones doing the pointing in that sense are the ones that are causing the problems. Because they're the ones who do set the policy. They're the ones who do have the influence. The George W. Bushes, the Dick Cheneys, they're financial backers. The Republican leadership. And their counterparts all over the world, because, you know, it's not just in America that they have these people. They have more power here than they have in some other places in the world, that's true, but they basically exist all over the world, and they've existed throughout human history. And if I want to point to a specific period in history where they didn't have that kind of control, I'd point to the New Deal years, because during the New Deal years, from the 1940s through the 1960s, working people had it pretty good. And if it started falling apart, it started falling apart because conservative propaganda started weaning its way through the system. The conservatives survived through the 50s with their anti-communist stuff, which played on people's fears, which is a very, very powerful, powerful argument. And also, other thing, you know, what Upton Sinclair said many years ago, he said that it's hard to get someone to believe in something when their job depends upon them not believing it. And that's still true to this day. And it's just important that we understand this. That the next time we get the reins of power back, we have to make it a global revolution. Not just an American Revolution, because the American Revolution wasn't about defeating the English. The American Revolution was about reestablishing who runs governments, because prior to that it was run by an aristocratic elite. And while that's still been for the most part true in America, it's time that we really started seriously changing that. Or at the very least, making sure the aristocratic elite understand that we got to get something out of it too. And what I want out of it is to take a little break here. We got a Puffy Yami Yumi break coming up. If you want to give me a call, slash chance, last section coming up, 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Puffy Yami Yumi break. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up his house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything here.
Yeah! A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back here in the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I was just listening to that music. That's Crazy on You. I love that song. Most of my music that I like is from the period where I grew up in, around the late 60s, early 70s, pre-disco 70s. I like some music from the 80s, but the bulk of the music that I like comes from that era. And you see it, for the most part, reflected in the music that I use here on the show. And that's all karaoke versions of these songs, by the way. That and you know, I'll get them and I'll listen to them, and if they don't sound like the real thing or very much like the real thing, I'll dump them. I hate to hear some of these karaoke songs that are like you know, it's like Casio keyboard, and it's like, shut up. And I was real happy to find the Sweet Home Chicago one, for which is the song that's my intro. I think it was ELO saying that said she liked that song in the beginning. That's Sweet Home Chicago. Specifically, that's the one that they use for the Blues Brothers movie, which I need to get on DVD. Great, great movie. And what's great about it for me is that I live here in Chicago, and I live and I work around some of the places where they film that. I mean, I go downtown every day, and I pass the Daly Center, the Daly Plaza, where they ran the car through the plaza, and where the car blew up, and they had the two little statue, goofy-looking statues there looking at the car, and the car blew up. You know, and then the place where they're in the tunnel and getting ready to go, and they say the line, it's 106 miles to Chicago, we got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it! And that's not far from here in the Lincoln Park Zoo, a little tunnel by the Lincoln Park Zoo. So it's really nice just, you know, going to these places. And I work just a few blocks from the Sears Tower, which is the tallest building in the country. And you know what's remarkable about Chicago is that they're building two more buildings that are both going to be taller than the Sears Tower. Can you imagine that? And it's interesting, I did some search, because Chicago has a lot of tall buildings. Chicago has some of the tallest buildings in the world, but Chicago does not have the most tall buildings. Buildings of, like, I think over 200 feet or something like that, or a certain amount of floors. Hong Kong has the most tall buildings like that, and I was very surprised about that. But, of course, you know, Chicago is a very unique city. It's not like New York. I mean, New York is New York. And New York is much bigger than Chicago. You know, Chicago's a big city. Don't get me wrong. You know, 4 or 5 million people live here. A lot of people live here. But New York, you know, that whole tri-state area is something like 18 million people. And Manhattan, I mean, that's a huge skyline. That's that almost rivals Hong Kong as far as the tallest. And, of course, it had World Trade Center and the Empire State Building. The Empire State Building was the tallest building in the world for a long time. And until the Sears Towers got built, the World Trade Center... Well, actually, the Sears Tower came out at the same time as the World Trade Center, maybe a little before. And the Sears Tower was taller than either one of those anyway. So it's wonderful being here in Chicago. It's wonderful being in the big city. And I think people who live out in the suburbs, out in the country, who have never been to the big city, maybe they like the quiet, but you know what? There's more stuff to do in a big city. It's easier to get around. And yes, it's got its pains. You know, if you drive around a lot, there's a lot of traffic. But you know what? There's nothing like living in a big city. There's nothing like living in a big city. Because all the stuff that comes out from the small towns, and what do you think it goes to? It eventually goes to the big city. But Chicago is a uniquely American city. Because New York, L.A., all the other really big cities in the country, they're really more international cities. Chicago is an American city. It's right here in the Midwest. It's right off the lake, and it's wonderful going by Lake Michigan here. And you know, not smelling the salt water. It's very strange because it's not salt water. It's fresh water, but it's big enough that it looks like an ocean. And I have yet. I got to go out. I want to take a boat trip out on the lake and just see the lake, and hopefully not get not on the Edmund Fitzgerald. I think I'll avoid that. And not during the winter. You know, just a nice summer trip out there. Maybe a little trip up the Chicago River. We were watching a history of Chicago on the local PBS station. And they were taking it was a river tour of Chicago. And it's just remarkable that the Chicago River goes right through the city and you have all the bridges that cross it. And, it you know, they call it Skyscraper Valley, I think. I'm just waxing sentimental here. It's just... It's just nice to live in a big city. That's all I can say. What do we got? We got about 5 more minutes here. Let me talk about this real quick because it is something that's important. I mentioned earlier on that Al Gore, if he decides to run for president officially, he's got my vote. And you know, he was doing his he had an appearance at a congressional committee yesterday, or at a senatorial committee. Was it the Congress or was it the Senate? Let's see, where the heck it was. It was a Senate hearing. Here we are. Hang on. Let me open up the link because it was really, really cool. Gore was being questioned by Oklahoma Senator Inhofe, who is one of the really hardcore Neanderthals of the Republican Party. At least from Oklahoma, what do you expect? You know? And he was asking questions, and of course he was asking, you know, loaded questions and expecting yes or no answer. And you're not going to get a yes or no answer from Al Gore. Al Gore is going to explain stuff to you. And he kept cutting him off and kept interfering. And Barbara Boxer, God bless her soul, she interrupted, you know. And she said, would you agree to let the vice president answer your questions? You know, and he said, well, he could talk when I'm finished talking. And you know, Boxer wasn't having any of it. She said, no, that's not the rule. You're not making the rules. You used to when you did this, and she held up the gavel. Elections have consequences, so I make the rules. And the audience applauded it. And Inhofe was just kind of reduced to like, ooh. He was, you know, like, but inside he said, you stupid. Because, you know, when the Republicans had power, they absolutely, to say they wielded it with an iron fist would be nice. Because they absolutely refused to let the Democrats have any kind of say in any sort of legislation whatsoever. They locked them out of the legislative process, which was ridiculous because the Republicans didn't control that much of the legislature. All through the times of this Republican dominance, it's always been pretty much 51-49, 52-48. It hasn't been a huge, huge amount of dominance. It hasn't been a mandate. Bush didn't win by that big a margin even in 2004. And he wouldn't have gotten in the first place if he hadn't had an intervention by the Supreme Court. I always joke that Bush won the election 5-4. And they act like they run the whole show. It was the New Deal Democrats that had that kind of mandate. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected four times by huge margins. And in the off-year elections in 1936, or in 1934, they made huge gains. And again in 1936, they controlled almost totally the Congress and the Senate. The Republicans regained the Senate back during the 50s, and what did they do? They started the McCarthy hearings. They can't do anything of substance because conservatives have been on the wrong side of every single issue since this country was founded. And the only way they can maintain their sense of power is by heavily propagandizing people, by using people's fear of communists, fear of them Mexicans stealing your jobs, even while they're hiring them to do all the cheap labor, fear of anybody that's different, fear of terrorists. Doesn't matter. That's how they've maintained it. Because they've been morally bankrupt, they've been ideologically bankrupt, they've been idealistically bankrupt since the country began. Conservatives were for slavery, the conservatives were for the British in the Revolutionary War, they were for slavery in the Civil War, they were against civil rights, they were against workers' rights. They've been wrong on pretty much every issue. And yet, because what they're really, really good at is getting money and getting power, they've managed to hold on and survive. Because if it hadn't been for that, they'd have been destroyed, laughed off the face of the planet as a bunch of idiots. But what they're good at, because guys like you and me aren't good at that. We're just good at talking on the radio. And I'm good at ending my show. So we have to do that. It is 2 minutes to the hour, and we got to finish up here. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of the Head On Radio Network. Agnes Kincaid running the board today, as always, doing a wonderful job out there in the studios in West Virginia. The Cup of Joe Radio Show is sponsored by UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news concerning the tragedy and the continuing tragedy along the Mississippi Gulf Coast and in Louisiana. Become a sponsor for the Cup of Joe Radio Show. It's quick and easy. Jeff Allen Wolf is next on most of your head-on radio network stations. Until tomorrow, where my guest will be Carol Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com, this is Joe Vecchio saying, hey, 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 get back to work.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Open a jar of Joe. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll dip a mug of Doug with the creamer of steam. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do.
Madam, there's a... there's an embryo growing in your fallopian tube, and it's going to kill you. No, no requirement for that. Because, you see, the guy, and part of this comes from our friend David in South Carolina. The other part of it comes from another one of these right-wing interview pitches that I keep getting from any number of places. And I never take their guests, and they keep pitching them to me. Commenting on this matter is Chris Slattery, the director of Expectant Mother Care, EMC Frontline Pregnancy Centers, New York's largest chain of crisis pregnancy. It's a chain! It's just like Walmart! Jeebus. Slattery, who is all for the new law, routinely drives and parks his mobile ultrasound van right by abortion clinics to show women pictures of their babies with the hope that they might reconsider their choice. Mr. Snellbaker, what is this? Reconsider their choice to abortion? I'm going to hit my head in the microphone in a minute. This guy is not even necessarily a licensed ultrasound tech. He is not allowed to give diagnoses. For all you know, he could be showing the lady her kneecap. It's a baby! And yet the geniuses in South Carolina think, we could have one of these on every, the Walmart on one corner and the emergency mother care. There's no mother care going on here. It's pornography. So anyway, our good friend David writes in from Florence, South Carolina. And he says, this should be required only if anyone who enlists in the armed forces is required to watch videos of innocent people being destroyed by